Good deal.
Let's see, is this working?
Yeah, good. I'm excited about being here. I first heard about Reverend Blair from when I was here in Vista Unity Church about 3 years ago. And everybody said, you got to go over there. Then when I went to the Unity Convention, I was here in San Diego, and I met a bunch of people from your congregation, and they were well represented. And I knew I'd fit right in with this church. Reverend Blair's unique ability to go back and forth between science and the creative and the more artistic stuff. It's really a unique combination in a person. So I'm glad to be here. And the music, after this morning service, I felt like I've been to a concert. I'm serious. I love the fact you have a choir here. And I remember when I was a little boy, in fact, I was a little boy, I was in the choir. So my voice changed. So today we're going to talk about miracles. And science is very uncomfortable with the idea of miracles. In fact, they don't like miracles at all. Because what is a miracle? A miracle is when something happens that breaks the laws of nature. But the truth of the matter is, modern day physics is finding that miracles happen all the time in the everyday world. Let me give you some examples. We know, for instance, that an object can't be in two different places at the same time. Wrong. Actually, when an electron is circling an atom, if there is not an observer, then the electron turns into energy. It's everywhere all at the same time. Amazing. Another one of my favorites, quantum entanglement. We know that one of the fundamental laws of nature is that nothing can go faster than the speed of light. That was Einstein's relativity theory. It's been proven time and time again. Well, about 1931, a physicist named Schrödinger in Heidelberg said that there's a unique occasion when there is communication faster than the speed of light. And what they talked about was when you have two electrons circling the same atom, if you separate these two guys, if you push on one of them, the other one will instantaneously go in the exact same direction. Let's say you separate them by over a million miles. They would still instantaneously go in the exact same direction. Well, Einstein didn't like this. His favorite quote is, God doesn't play dice with the universe. And they had this kind of jousting match going on between the one group and Einstein for 40 years. In fact, at one point, Einstein said, this is spooky action at a distance. That's pretty dramatic for a scientist. And so eventually, Einstein lost. They proved that the communication between these two electrons was indeed faster than the speed of light when they separated them. And a matter of fact, they kept that entanglement no matter how far they were separated. They're forever entangled. Now, when they redid the experiment last year in Switzerland using new technology, they found that not only was the communication faster than the speed of light, it was 10,000 times faster than the speed of light. Unbelievable. Now, however, as exciting as this stuff is, the biggest challenge for science, especially for physics, is what to do about consciousness. Now, we mentioned earlier that as long as you have an observer, then the electron stays as an electron, as a little ball of matter. But if nobody's observing it, what happens is the electron magically disappears into energy waves. We all saw that in the movie, What to Bleep. Most everybody here has probably seen the movie because they're from the Unity Church. They kind of do that. It almost seems like it's prerequisite to be a Unity member. But remember that when that eye was watching the ball and the ball stayed a ball, but if, when the eye wasn't watching, it turned into waves? Well, those were energy waves. They never did say the word energy, and they just said waves. So they didn't really explain it very well. But basically what the dilemma is with physics is, without consciousness, you can't have matter. Without matter, you can't have a universe. So in other words, consciousness is needed, an observer is needed, in order to make energy waves into matter. Otherwise, we'd have nothing. Or a bunch of probability, the way they use it in physics. So what they've really done, in a roundabout way, is proven God. Think about it. There's got to be an observer. Who is the observer? A couple of physicists last year, they're starting to address this problem. It's been around for like 30 or 40 years. But they're starting to address it now. couple of physicists from Stanford, very famous physicists, have suggested that maybe we're creating a universe with our telescopes. Every time we look out there, it collapses those energy waves into galaxies and stars and planets. I think that's kind of a stretch, but that's a theory. Other physicists who are more Eastern-based have suggested that maybe the whole universe is consciousness, being aware of itself. So that's why you have continuity in matter. Patanjali, 10,000 years ago, recognized this dilemma, and he wasn't a quantum physicist, but he wrote in his book, The Yoga Sutras, that how come if we're creating our own universe, and he made the statement that we are creating our own universe, if I go to the forest and I see a tree down, and you go independently of me to the forest and see the same tree down, then what is causing our observation to be the same, since we're creating our own realities? He said there must be an independent perceiver. And of course, that independent perceiver is God. Interesting. So, consciousness then is huge. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the research on consciousness, and we're going to see what the research on consciousness says. And what we're going to find is the research on consciousness also finds miracles happen on an everyday basis. Let me give you some examples. First of all, I like to categorize them in four different groups. The first group is the prayer research, which, by the way, Unity Church has participated in many studies, and all of them being significant. And including one study, which we'll talk about today. But to me, the bigger issue is the fact that Unity Church believes in its message so much that it subjected itself to scientific scrutiny tells me a lot about the message that Unity Church has. I think it's a very powerful one. The second one is the meditation research, which is the research that I was involved with. Those of you who saw the movie What to Bleep, we took 4,000 meditators into Washington, D.C. and actually changed the crime rates while we were there. The third group of research is the research that shows that we can know things happen before they happen, kind of like psychic stuff. And the fourth group is the research from Princeton that showed that our consciousness can actually influence machines. So let's start with the prayer research. Now, we're all familiar with the first prayer studies. This probably happened about 25 or 30 years ago. What they did is they prayed for one ward of the hospital, and he didn't pray for the surrounding wards. And what they found was that the ward they prayed for had less need for antibiotics, tended to get well faster, had a better quality of life, and in some cases, less deaths than the surrounding wards. And most scientists poo-pooed this early research. They said that what was happening was that the people doing the praying happened to pick the ward of the hospital that had the best doctors and the best nurses. And the people doing the praying had an uncanny knack for figuring out which of those wards had the best doctors and nurses. And eventually, though, they did something called a double-blind study. I think it was in 1981 or 88, one of those two. I can't remember which one it is right now. Drawing a blank there. But Dr. Bird is the one who did it. And double-blind is the Cadillac version of research. Double-blind, it means you separate people in two different groups, and you're interspaced throughout the hospital in a random way, so you don't know which ward they're going to be in. And the people know they're in a study, but they don't know whether they're going to be prayed for or not being prayed for. And lo and behold, they came up with the exact same research finding as the other studies that had been done before. There was a bunch of these studies done. And finally, science had to say that there's something to prayer. But scientists, being very adverse to the idea of God, tended to think, well, maybe what's happening is positive thinking. And we all know the value of positive thinking. You can't be coming to Reverend Blair's church without knowing the value of positive thinking. The question is prayer the same as positive thinking? What do you think? Yes and no. Maybe we should take a vote. Well, let's find out. Actually, Unity Church did this study. They wanted to find out whether prayer was the same as positive thinking. So what they did is they did something called a triple-blind study. Now, what is a triple-blind study? A triple-blind study is where the person being prayed for doesn't know that he's being prayed for. So let's say I'm sick. Reverend Blair is praying for me, and I don't know that he's praying for me. But I get well faster because he's praying for me. That can't be due to positive thinking because I didn't even know he's praying for me, right? Does that make sense? Well, they did studies like this. Call it a triple-blind study. And in this particular study, it was done in Kansas City, which is the home of Unity Church. It was St. John's Hospital. I think it was St. Joe's or St. John's, one of the two downtown. And they took everybody that entered the hospital in a six-month period, over 1,200 people. And then again, they randomly assigned them to groups. One group they prayed for, one group they didn't pray for. And the people doing the receiving of the prayers, the people in the experiment, didn't know they were being prayed for. In fact, even the doctors and nurses didn't know there was a study going on, except for the hospital administrator. And they found the exact same results as the other prayer research. Now, this blew a lot of people's minds. So they tried to replicate the study in an independent way at Columbia University in New York. And what they did there, they had a little interesting twist in their study. They had people in America praying for people in Korea. So somehow the prayers had to go through molten rock and whatever else is in the middle of the earth and find the right person in Korea. And then the other angle was it was a women's in vitro fertilization clinic, women trying to get pregnant. And again, the women didn't know they were being prayed for. So what they found was the women who were being prayed for had a 50% greater chance of getting pregnant than the women who weren't being prayed for. Pretty amazing. Also brings up a whole new dimension to the idea of immaculate conception, but we won't touch that one here. So what we've seen is a whole bunch of research, probably about 250 studies done on prayer, that is extremely reliable. In fact, probably is the most reliable of all the research out there. But one of the bigger questions here is, how come even one of those studies came out significant, much less 250? Interesting. The most science has a lot of variability. The research isn't very reliable. For instance, hot coffee. Every week you read a conflicting study on coffee. Coffee is good for you this week, bad for you the next week. Eggs, remember eggs? If you looked at an egg, you're going to get a heart attack. Then they said, whoops, it's not the egg, it's that little yellow thing in the middle. And they said, whoops, again, we're wrong. It's not eggs that cause heart attacks, it's inflammation. Those landmark studies from the New England Journal of Medicine about 3 years ago. But by then, they had all these statin drugs out. But you notice they didn't take back all those statin drugs, which work on cholesterol. They just kept them out there. I won't explain why that happened either. But anyway, regardless of the situation, with the prayer research, it's far more reliable than almost anything out there. Amazing. Similar to the prayer research is the meditation research. Because the prayer research, actually, you're influencing people at a distance with your consciousness. The same with meditation research. As you were suggesting, it's actually a conscious going outside, in a way. Because what we did is we waltzed into Washington, D.C., and actually changed the crime rates while we were there. And Marion Barry, Marion was the mayor then. He was the cocaine mayor. This is after he got rehabilitated. Kind of like the phoenix rose up from the dead. And he was actually quite pleasant. And before we went there, we actually talked to Marion Barry, we talked to the police chief, we talked to everybody. We explained what we were going to do. And the newspapers even knew about it. We were so sure it was going to work, that's the reason we did that. We'd already done a bunch of studies. In fact, the first studies that were published by me in the early 80s. And we had about four or five of them done in a couple, 3 years, and every one of them came out significant. At this point, we've had like 40 of them done, all of them significant. And we waltzed in, and we had to make sure that we got enough people there. So as they arrived, we all would be meet in a big, huge ballroom every morning, about 7:30. And we'd meditate till about 12, and then we'd come take a break for an hour or two, and then come back around 3, and then meditate till about 7. And while we were there, we were able to reduce the crime rates by 23% for that six-week period, proving that our consciousness can indeed influence the outside world. Now, what makes the prayer research and the meditation research kind of unique is there is no brain wave or energy emanating from our brain that can account for these amazing findings. There is no energy in our brain. In fact, it doesn't even get past our skull bones. Kind of an interesting mystery, kind of a quantum kind of thing, beyond time, space, limitation. Now, the other research also suggest a quantum type kind of thing going on in our consciousness as well. We want to get to the third group. The third group is the group that says that we can know anything before it happens. And this experiment actually was done by accident. What happened was they were doing a traditional psychic experiment, except they had a little different variation on it this time. They had two groups of photographs that were going to come up on a screen, like you're watching a TV screen. And every 8 seconds, a new photograph would come on the screen. And one of those photographs would be negative, and another one would be positive. And the negative ones were very gruesome. These are people in morgues. The positive photos were going out on the beach in San Diego. Something like that, nature scenes. And the person had to guess in advance which of those photos was going to come up on the screen. Of course, they were randomly distributed, so you didn't know which one was going to come up. And they couldn't guess. But lucky for us, that wasn't the end of the story. Because the negative photos were so gruesome, people being in morgues, they decided to hook everybody in the experiment up to a GSR machine. The GSR machine measures anxiety in the body. It's similar to a lie detector. And what they anticipated, there'd be a spike in anxiety every time the negative photo was presented. Well, they did indeed find the spike of anxiety, but they found it 2 seconds before the negative photo was presented. So in other words, their body knew what was going to happen before it happened. Remember the old adage, I knew it in my gut? There's a lot of truth to that adage. They replicated that experiment in an independent laboratory because nobody believed their results. And then they found the exact same results. And then they actually looked inside MRIs in that same experiment. Using MRIs, they can look inside the brain. And they found the whole brain would light up with anxiety about 4 seconds before the negative photo was presented. Now, this shocked a lot of people. But this study basically stayed there untouched for about 12 years until last year. Something truly amazing happened. A psychologist by the name of Dr. Behm, he's in every psychology textbook, by the way, he's very famous, decided to investigate this study. Now, he used college kids, 19-year-old college kids with raging hormones, so he had a little different angle on it, but you've got to get the idea that he got something that got him excited. And then he had them kind of anticipate whether that photograph was going to come up in advance, like the same other study. Except that this time, what he did was, he had them guess before the computer decided which photograph was going to come up on the screen. They had to guess 2 seconds before the computer decided, kind of like precognition. He figured that was going to be an adequate test of anything. If it could work there, it could work anywhere. And out of 10 studies, 9 came out significant. The chances of that happening is 1 in 4 billion. One of the most powerful studies ever done on all of science. Most reliable one. And anyway, he published it in the Journal of Social Psychology last year to a firestorm of criticism. In fact, the journal editor said if it was anybody else doing the study, they would have thought it was fake data. The only reason they published it so other psychologists could figure out what Dr. Behm did wrong. Seriously, that's what they said. Tells you where psychology is. And the most good thing for us, there's a lot of psychologists out there who aren't like that, but I'm just saying we're general with the establishment kind of thing. But So anyway, this is amazing. We can know things before they happen. Our body does, anyway. And the last one we're going to touch on is the research from Princeton. A bunch of engineers and scientists in Princeton had the idea, well, if our consciousness is indeed quantum field-based, then why don't we design a machine which is quantum field-based and see if our consciousness could influence that machine. So what they used was quantum field radiation, radiation from outer space, cosmic radiation, you call it. And it's very reliable. In fact, you can run atomic clocks by it. I did a class like we're going to be doing the next couple days in Colorado Springs, and somebody from NORAD came down and actually said that the atomic clocks, they work on atomic clocks there all the time, and they're perfectly reliable. They know, he checks them once a year. That's all they need to do. So anyway, this radiation comes down, and they made a machine called a quantum field random number generator. It generates numbers. That's a 1 and a 0 is a good way to explain it. And because it's so reliable, it would basically be 101010. Then they took college freshmen and had them concentrate on these machines to see if they could change the output from 1010 to 111 or 000. And they found over hundreds of thousands of trials, there was a small but significant effect. And personally, I don't know how they managed it, because I remember when I was a freshman in college, I could barely get out of bed, much less influence a quantum field random number generator. But they were able to get these college freshmen to do it. And finally had the brilliant idea, maybe we can get more power, more results, if we put three or four of these kids together and have them concentrate at the same time. And that's what they found. The more they had concentrating, the bigger the effect. So they put these machines all over the whole United States. And in fact, all over the world. And so I think there's 50 of them right now going on. And what happens is they stay the same until there's a cause, there's an event, like a big major event, like Katrina, the tsunami, the OJ trial verdict. And they have like 250 of these things. And every time there's a major event, the machines go crazy. Instead of 1010, they go to 111 or 000. The Olympics. The opening ceremonies, they go, everyone across the whole world goes, because everybody's watching it. I think there's 4 billion people watch the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. So these machines were going on during 9/11. Two amazing things happened during 9/11. The first amazing thing was the machines went crazy for 4 straight days. Nothing like that's ever been seen before. But even more so, the machines went crazy 4 hours before 9/11 actually happened. Before the terrorists even got in the airplane. Pretty amazing. In other words, we knew as a collective what was going to happen before it happened in our subconscious. So, what we've done, we've looked at a bunch of research that actually proves that our consciousness has quantum field properties. There's one more thing I want to say. A lot of people get this confused. A lot of people talking about intentions and all this kind of stuff nowadays. And when we went to Washington, D.C. to change the crime rates, how many times did we think about changing the crime rates? Once a day? Once every meditation? Or all the time during our meditation? Or zero times? Zero times is right. We never once thought about meditation, crimes, while we meditated. We simply sat there and meditated. We let go. Now, I'm not going to say we didn't have the intention because we flew out there. But once we flew out there, that's all we did. We sat there. The interesting thing about the quantum is, if you're going to manifest during the quantum, you can't try to get to the quantum. Because any attempt at trying to get there will keep from getting there. That's why I have the koans from the Zen tradition to kind of get your mind confused so you give up. Remember the sound of one hand clapping? That's they call a koan. So we can draw many conclusions from this. The first, I think, really important one is that this scientific stuff proves that our consciousness is quantum field based. If it's quantum field based, it means that the idea that when our consciousness dies, when our brain dies, our consciousness dies, is not true. Because when most scientists believe that if your brain dies, your consciousness dies. Well, if our consciousness is quantum field based, it's beyond time-space limitations. It's not based on the brain. So our consciousness doesn't have to die. The other thing is, in a roundabout way, in fact, maybe even directly, physics has proven that there is a God. It's certainly proven that there's an observer. Beyond time-space limitations, observer. However, practically speaking, there's two things that I think really come out of this research. The first is that together we can make a bigger difference than we can alone. When we have more people meditating like we did today in this church, or I think you do a Wednesday meditation too? Here? Yeah. Those things are huge. A lot of people are saying, oh, this negativity is going on. You can make a difference. Go to these group meditations. Be in that flow. And the other thing that's really important is that all of us in here have doubts. Everybody in here has doubts. It's good to know that science is proving what we know to be true in our hearts about all this spiritual stuff. It gives us confidence. It empowers us. Thank you very much for inviting.
So talk a little bit about the workshop this afternoon and tomorrow night.
Beautiful. One of the things, I've probably taught close to 15,000 people these workshops on how to manifest your dreams. And the first question I always ask people in the workshop is, how many people know what their problems are, but they keep making the same mistakes over and over again? Everybody usually raises their hand. And that's not your fault. These are old brain pathways. Now, recently, a lot of people like Deepak Chopra and Bruce Lipton have been saying that our stuff is in our subconscious, and that's what's really causing it. It's no wonder we can't figure it out. Well, this class will help you figure out your subconscious stuff that's holding you back from manifesting. And then we're also going to teach you the tapping technique, which is the tapping on the acupuncture points like I'm doing right now. And you can use that to supercharge your positive thoughts. So those of you taking Reverend Blair's church on prosperity, perfect thing to accent what he's teaching you. You use the body energies to enhance the mental stuff. So we're going to teach you that technique. We're going to mix it with heart math, because we're going to use that. Heart math is what we did in the group meditation today. And because it gets you into that flow in just a minute. So once you're in the flow, you can use that quantum flow to manifest with and also get your intentions into your subconscious. So that'll be an amazing class. It will transform your life. If you can't make today's class, you can come to tomorrow. So it's a two-day class. But I'm going to teach you to manifest both days. That way, if you miss one day, you'll still get it. And tomorrow's class will for sure do some healing. We'll show you how to heal with tapping and with the heart math as well. If you can't make today's class, then come early tomorrow at 5:30 so we can catch you up on the stuff you missed from today. But basically, it's a two-day class. You also get a free DVD and a workbook, 40-page, plus a bunch of papers for coming as well. If you can't make either day, then you can, there's a DVD and a CD combination that will help you get, take the class, you can take it at home. Let's see, I'm also doing individual appointments, healing appointments tomorrow if anybody wants any. So we'll be doing healing on Monday night for sure, in case you can't come during the day. We'll be doing healing in the class, we'll try to get everybody healed in the class, usually we do. So anyway, I'm very excited about this class, and I'm looking forward to being with you tomorrow and today. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Lawrence.